Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, trying something different. We're in Zeke's Smoking Lounge down here in lovely Alabaster County.
A little something old with a little something new.
A little something old, something new. We got Seth. Say hi, Seth.
Hi, Seth.
We got Mark.
Hi, Mark.
We got Mr. Blue Balls here.
We got, yeah, from the Blue Ox. And we are talking about the 1996 Academy Award winning best...
You gotta rub it in my face, don't you?
Best, well, it's best... It was best picture, best adapted screen... Was it adapted screenplay or original screenplay? It's based on a true story.
We should read the Chronicles of Tony.
You realize there's no plug in the end of my guns, right?
Yeah, like in... Like there was in this movie.
Is that a sexual thing?
It wasn't even a plug. It was it was like a starter pistol at some point. Anyway, that's technical gun stuff. Ignore the chest. We're talking about Fargo, Coen Brother classic from 1996.
You go first.
And
is that the only way you win is play yourself?
No, we're not playing chess. We're doing a podcast.
We can do it at the same time.
No, we can't.
Marco just talk the whole time.
The smart move. No, that's okay. Just not to play.
Mm-hmm. It's like
learn anything from war games.
War games with Joshua. So, my first impression of this movie...
Makes me think Lucas.
Yeah, my first impression of this movie was seeing it, and a lot of people... It was pretty popular, right? Like, it did all right at the box office. A lot of people watched it and like, talked about it. And I think the biggest thing was the whole, like, accent of, like, the people from Minnesota, you know, in North Dakota. They talk like this. They all talk like Bobby's World's mom.
Bobby's World.
You know, remember Bobby's World, that cartoon that
I do, but
Howie
I remember
Mandel
his mom.
His mom was always like, "Oh, don't you know?"
Wasn't he Canadian?
Yeah, so it's probably his mom.
Let's talk a little about Hitman.
Well, we did watch part of Hitman before.
You seen Hitman?
No,
we talked. Zach and I already did a podcast about Hitman when it was fresh.
Well, people maybe want to know about Hitman now.
Well,
maybe
what do you have to add?
Hitman.
What do you have something to add?
The ground. Shut the fuck up.
Oh wow. We can talk about Hitman in a minute here. I want to talk about
Fargo.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, if Hitman was 10 and like 0 was like the worst movie ever, what would Fargo be?
What is the worst movie? This would make possibilities.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. How many Hitmans is Fargo? Quite a few. It's a good movie.
It is a good movie.
Definitely a good movie. It's one of those movies that I very rarely feel like watching. And I almost always have this like kind of... It always kind of works against itself because it's got some slow parts. It's very slow in some places, but it's all character and it's all mood. And
it touches my phone.
For what it is, yeah, it's one of those Coen movies. It's like serious.
You just stay away from my bones.
And yet it's still pretty darn funny.
What are you like presenting?
And quirky and... Oh my gosh, you guys. I'm trying to talk about a serious movie here based on a true story. And really,
I was wondering about that. Were you like, for real?
What do you mean? You
saw like the thing for reals, dude?
You saw the thing at the beginning, right?
And it's not true.
Really? I never remembered.
I thought you were just fucking with Seth.
I forgot.
No, it's not a true story. They picked pieces from... I think there actually was a wood chipper event.
Uh-huh. So the whole thing with, like, this is exactly as it happened was basically just, like, a big joke, a Coen joke? Okay, well, that's pretty funny. I think I did know that. It's been,
making look like
it's been a long time since I've seen this movie. Like,
the only reason
years.
I know is my copy... I must have a different copy.
It doesn't have that?
A bunch of special features.
Oh, well, the DVD might have some special features. I just haven't watched them.
You had the trailer.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's one of those original DVDs. So yeah, it's got the trailer and that's it. But that's fine. It's watchable. It's got a lot of gunk. You know, there's a lot of like hairs on the gate kind of stuff from the film transfer from the print. But no one wants to hear about that. They want to hear about our take on it. And I'd say that like most Coen movies,
I want to hear about hairs on the gate.
I have not seen.
I want to hear about bugs.
Yeah, there's bugs. I have not seen Lady Killers or Intolerable Cruelty.
I saw Lady Killers, and it was not good.
Yeah, I would have to say that having not seen those two movies, and also having not seen Hudsucker Proxy, which I still really want to see.
Yeah, include me in that one.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll try to buy it for like $2 or something.
Yeah, I don't own it, so if you were going to get it, that'd be great.
For $2?
I've liked almost all of their movies.
$2.50.
Cheap bastard.
that I've seen. Those two aside, those are probably the two bad ones, or maybe they're just the two unremarkable ones.
Barton Fink still didn't resonate.
I enjoyed Barton Fink, just for some the strangeness of it. I mean, I think
Miller's Crossing too.
Yeah, Miller's Crossing I really liked.
That one had some moments.
Yeah, with Albert Finney and it's good. I mean, it's hard to dislike a Coen movie. It is. And
have we done Raising Arizona?
No, we haven't talked about it. No, I mean that's another. At the same time that I like all the Coen movies, it's other than Big Lebowski, it's rare for me to feel like, you know what, I want to watch with that Coen movie again. It's not like a regular occurrence. Like, I don't think I'd ever care to see Blood Simple again. It's a good movie. It's a really good movie. But I just don't think I ever would care about watching it again. And I mean, with Fargo, if someone hadn't seen it and was like, oh, I'd like to check that out, then maybe I'd watch it with them again. But this is the third time.
It's a movie I could probably watch once every couple of years.
Yeah, maybe like every 5 years or something. It's been probably about eight since I've seen it. This is my third time, I think, seeing it. And so, you know, there's a lot going on in the background and stuff. But it also feels like they've done a lot of those sort of true crime things. And they've also done a bazillion of those 48-hour and Dateline mystery things now that really kind of talk about this stuff.
Those generally aren't
funny. No, they're not as funny normally. And this movie is, I mean, it's got a lot of humor, but it's also really, it's really dark. It's really pretty upsetting, I think, on some level.
You know what's crazy is last night I caught part of a show, I think it was on E, where this guy, and he reminded me a lot of Danny Bonaducci for whatever reason. And he has a radio personality.
Mm-hmm.
And he got his ass in some big-time financial trouble. So to solve the problem, he poisons his very devoted wife with antifreeze.
For the life insurance?
Yeah. It was really fucked up. And he poisoned her over weeks. And he was pouring it into Gatorade. Whatever Gatorade flavor is approximately the same color as
some kind of lime, I
not
think.
Not propylene, ethylene glycol.
Yeah, it's some kind of lime.
And the one thing, I mean, the real smoking gun was she was emailing friends of hers, and she, in one of her emails, she mentions that she just can't really tolerate anything sweet, and her husband keeps trying to get her to drink Gatorade. And I'm like, God damn.
Okay.
No, I mean, that motherfucker, I wasn't able to catch the end, so I don't know what he got sentenced, but I hope it was bad.
Definitely. He got it. He got what was coming to him, probably.
But there's this one part, I mean, it's just so damn sad. She's writing to her friends about how, because she's ill for a while, about how
she's being poisoned,
worried that her illness is going to cause him problems with school and work and all this shit. When he's completely lied to her, he fabricated this acceptance letter to the Harvard School of Business MBA program and all this crazy shit. And she's sitting there being poisoned by him, concerned that her illness is going to cause him trouble. I'm like, what a stinking piece of shit.
You could say that again. But this is the same thing with Bill Mace. And I thought he had a mustache in this movie, but he doesn't. I mean, I guess there's enough people with mustaches running around. You got the funny-looking guy, played by Steve Buscemi.
Funny-looking.
This was,
in
I guess...
In a general kind of way.
Yeah, in a general kind of way. Or a little more than general, I guess. That's what that...
And yeah, Gunderson.
Gunderson, yeah.
He had a stash.
He had a stash, for sure. No, I mean,
we gotta bring up Stan.
Stan Grossman.
Stan Grossman.
Stan the man. He's the one you want in your corner. If the gross man needs to cometh.
If you got a real sweet deal brewing.
Mm-hmm. Sweet deal. Grossman will tell you which way's up, which way's down.
Wow.
On that deal. He'll broker it. He'll broker a deal.
And that True Coat. It makes me wonder if the True Coat was a real deal thing.
I'm sure it was.
Installed from the factory and all that jazz.
Oh, yeah, you know. That was always how they'd get you, right? Back in the day.
Back in the day.
Wonder if they have anything like that now. I'm sure they do.
This movie makes me laugh my ass off. But there are some moments that really they're too close to reality.
Oh yeah, there's some frightening stuff and some
nothing. Absolutely nothing is romanticized. I mean, it's just people at their lowest, and it's believable.
Oh yeah,
and I mean down to Mike the psycho, the Asian guy.
Yeah, Mike Soriyama from the Venture Brothers.
That was pretty bad.
Yeah, but at the same time, I feel like both that scene with him in the bar and
that scene was so necessary.
And the phone call necessary. Were both like they were just side things on her character maybe, and I mean I'm sure there's been a lot written about it, and maybe I'm the ignoramus for not knowing.
Pendulum starting to swing again. Yeah.
How important they are in the greater theme of the story. I mean, I don't know. I guess you do have Marge to kind of balance out. She's the sort of intelligent, reasonable person in this group, so it doesn't make it look like everybody in the Midwest
is. She digs her some Arby's.
Is a dipstick, you know, entirely. So it's not like some kind of weird indictment of the Midwest or anything like that necessarily.
Yeah, the Twin Cities are kind of cool looking. Almost makes. It'd be a summertime jaunt.
Oh, yeah.
Don't they have like a big mall or something?
Visit Prince.
Prince?
Prince? Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe he's like the Santa at the mall. He's like, O-E-O-E-O. He invites Morris Day and the Time out.
That'd be sweet.
And they rock it. Rock it into the
I always remember him from Moving. Because he played the freaky little guy that was trying to marry that hot chick from Clueless.
Oh, wow.
That was in Playboy, which was such a disappointment. Big disappointment.
That's too bad.
It was too bad.
Hey, you know what? That's part of life, disappointments. You know, there's more to life than money. There's also disappointments. That's, I think, a lesson from
Fargo.
From Fargo. And little victories, little 3-cent stamp victories, you know? That's as good as it gets, maybe, for some people. And that's the way it goes for Drew Carey's transvestite brother.
I really, you know, the movie was pretty solid in a lot
of ways. No, it's. They've always had good production value, and it's a Minnesota movie, which, I mean, they're from Minnesota, and so, like, it has a lot in common with their most recent movie, A Serious Man, in a way. It's also a story where, I mean, sort of the main character, if there is one, it's a little less clear who the main character is in this movie, because...
I was almost thinking the guy that was buying the car from... Lundegaard?
Yeah.
I was thinking it was Garrison Keillor, but it's not.
Oh, no, no. You mean the guy that uses the F-bomb?
He drops the bomb.
No, it's not Garrison Keillor. This is an American Life, but, you know.
I didn't see that.
Who knows? I think I've got that on DVD. We could watch that sometime if you want to. Robert Altman's final movie.
Well, you know, I got to meet him.
Oh, cool.
He is a character.
No, I think that's what he's paid to be. But,
I used to read his column, too.
Cool. Yeah. No, the,
I read one of his books.
The Coens always sort of have a way to just make these sort of dramas still have humor and, like you said, still have sort of a strange realism, despite their, like, absurdism. I mean, this movie doesn't have a huge amount. But, yeah, it does, and they're able to kind of work it in a way that's less bizarre than
this movie people. Has a lot of moments when I was younger I would have cringed and had a hard time watching.
Really, this movie? Because, oh, like the cop getting it in the head and stuff?
No, not gross out. No, moments that are just so humiliating that.
Oh yeah, you want to turn it away?
Like when. Lundegaard, when William H. Macy's getting pulled out and he's whining like a little bitch.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, that is pretty bad.
The cops are pulling him. It's like, you don't want to see people acting like that. But you do. You can't turn away, but you want to.
No, I mean, it's...
It makes you squirm.
It's a strange movie. It's almost... If you
Something's
really...
burnt out in me, though, because I used to be like that when I was younger.
And now you don't care anymore? Yeah, now you kind of revel in it, and you're kind of like, ah, yes, more.
More.
More humiliation good. Of other people. Yes, good, yes, good. Yeah, it's a weird movie, because if you look at the structure of it, you really aren't ever given any kind of real main character. I mean, I guess ostensibly Marge, the sheriff that goes on this big Marge investigation, is the main character, but we don't get introduced to her till, well, like, pretty much halfway into the movie, I'd say. I mean, the movie's like an hour and 40 minutes, and it's got to be at least 45 minutes before she even comes into it. Because, yeah, it's after the kidnapping, it's after...
We haven't even talked about Shep.
Yeah.
We gotta talk about Shep.
Shep is good. Shep is one of those classic, like, quiet, you know, whatever type... You know, he's like, Chief. What if this is Chief? Chief, he rips the sink out, he throws it through the window, and he runs off to freedom, and then he goes and gets a job working at the Gunderson Automotive, fixing cars at the dealership.
All he did was vouch for the guy.
And then he vouched, and then he got in trouble, and then... I always remembered there being some kind of, like, backstory on that Shep got taken out in that scene where he's going crazy, beating everybody in that, like, entire apartment complex.
And the crazy thing is, the funny-looking guy is by far more reasonable than the guy Shep vouched for.
Oh,
yeah. Never quite understood that. So he beats the shit out of the funny-looking guy.
I kept thinking it was the other guy he vouched for.
Yeah, it's like, who the fuck would vouch for that psycho?
Exactly, right?
Maybe if you just keep feeding him pancakes,
who knows?
Things would have worked out better.
Yeah, that whole thing is just so weird. But at the same time, Buscemi is totally... I mean, if anything, this movie's biggest theme, obviously, is greed. And, I mean, because Buscemi creates a scene over $4, and then later on, he's... killed over what, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000.
It was the burnt umber.
Yeah, it was the burnt umber.
That true code too.
It was half the paint, half the payment on a burnt umber, and then he could have hopped in the car and gone and got almost
like,
$1 million to himself.
Just give him the fucking $10,000.
Yeah, exactly. And but instead he went.
I would have just given him.
You don't want it to seem too easy, or the guy's gonna think something's up. So you would argue a little.
I never would have gone back in the first place. You got bodies just stacking up.
That's true.
You're going back to a fucking psycho.
Yeah, but at the same time, you make good with the psycho.
Or you
and
just
then you
shoot
leave.
Him.
Yeah, that's true.
I just shot his ass and kept the whole thing. I mean, at this point, you know, great line and heat.
Yeah, you gotta know when the heat's around the corner.
No, it's when they're talking, when Al Pacino's talking about the guards getting shot.
Mm-hmm.
Because why? Yeah. Why leave a living witness?
Why leave a witness? Yeah,
you already got a
at this point. You already got it going. You just keep going.
Yeah.
Exactly. I always think about that. Whenever I think about jobs I might be pulling, I'm like, well, you know, why?
The collateral damage.
No, but movies like this are like great cautionary tales for. They should show them to all the like.
White, it is like a Greek tragedy, very much.
They
so.
Should show them to all the like white trash kids
is
in
Stan
like, high
like
school.
The chorus.
Yeah. Stan Grossman is definitely the chorus. He's like Polonius or Thelonious or whatever.
I'm not quite that far.
Hitting on his trumpet. No. It's just like my biggest deterrent. I think most people's biggest deterrent for committing crimes, especially like greed-based crime, is like you're gonna get caught and you're gonna get in trouble and like. It's like, even if you get away with it, it's like, how do you actually get away with it? Because think about what...
You know, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, think about what Linderman is all about, or Loderman, or Lundgren. He was gonna take that money...
Lundgren.
And then he was gonna use it...
It was Lundgren.
Yeah, he was gonna use it on this deal that he had already told his dad, his father-in-law about. Like his father-in-law wouldn't be horribly suspicious. Well, wait a minute, I just paid $1 million to get my daughter back. I mean, it was like none of this would have ever worked. Even if everything had gone perfect for the kidnapping and everything.
I never quite figured it out. I got the impression, it doesn't really explain it too well. He borrows $320,000 from using cars that he doesn't have as collateral. We never find out what that $320,000 is for.
No, we never quite do we?
It doesn't matter. Gambling, whatever.
Well, no, I think it was part of that deal. It was probably like an initial like down payment on something to get this lot or whatever. I mean, basically, he's just a loser trying to think he's got one good thing, and he's doing his best to try and make it happen. But a loser is as a loser is, and that's sort of the real tragedy. Is you know, always like, oh, Scotty and Gina will be all right. but you loser piece of crap, you're not gonna be okay. You can't provide for them, and they'll be provided for, but you're dead in the snow, you know?
He was pretty much a loser.
He was. And so, I mean, like Bobby D's best character is this boy's life. I don't like to see the face. He was terrible.
He didn't like to see the face.
Yeah, I think he definitely didn't like the, not that face. Oh my God, you see his wife in that?
That's, you know, that's the sad thing.
Like having sex with a Muppet.
Is she seemed like a nice lady. Like
nice enough, nice, yeah. Mother. She knew the definition of delineate or whatever. Not delineate, disparate. You know what disparate means, don't you? I mean, it's just like, there's, if anything, you watch these true crimes and everything else, and you're just like, so you steal the money, you get away with it, but like, you never, how are you going to ever spend it? How are you ever going to be able to, like, you're eventually going to get caught. It's Al Capone style.
Well, that's,
you know?
That was the beauty of the D.B. Cooper caper.
Mm-hmm. The Cooper cape.
The Cooper cape.
Just jump out and make
kind of like the Lufthansa.
No one looks for a dead man. Right? No one looks for a dead man.
Oh, nuke half the building?
Is that, who knows, I guess, yeah. Nuke half the building. You can only nuke half a building.
Well, yeah. Depends on how much you got.
I guess so, yeah.
If it's like one of the North Korean nukes, then probably.
Oh my gosh.
It just flatters and
fizzles. Knock on wood, huh?
Yeah, no shit.
I don't know, back... This movie, I remember...
So you're talking,
like,
about morality now.
Yeah, well, no, but this movie, I remember being so huge with, like, critics and stuff. I mean, like, I think, like, Ebert just loved this movie to death. He loved these like, the stuff with Marge and her husband. All this, like, you talk about realism, all this stuff about, like...
It was. I was thinking
two
about
people
it.
That have a real life, yeah.
Relationship.
Yeah, and that sort of stuff. And at the same time, I'm like, does just portraying that in a movie make the movie super great?
You don't,
great?
You honestly don't
you,
see that.
You don't see it that often. I think you maybe see more of it now, and I wouldn't say it's necessarily because of that, but maybe it's just
this
sort of demystifying. I mean, there's still a lot of, you know, there's definitely still a lot of Hollywood, sleek, polished stuff. I'm not going to say there isn't, but I don't know. I feel like Fargo was a little ahead of its time in terms of that sort of quirky, attempting to be more real, kind of just downright not concerned with too rigid of a structure.
If there's anything
drama, comedy kind of thing,
I would have thrown in some John Goodman somewhere. It's just to be the crazy neighbor.
Yeah, yeah. The good man would have been interesting. I don't know. Some Totoro, maybe.
You could definitely fit Totoro in there somewhere.
Totoro and Goodman. It would have been great if they should do a movie where it's just Totoro and Goodman as like two beat cop, not beat cops even, like detectives set in like 1965 or something.
That'd be pretty cool.
Like in Chicago or no, just do it in Minnesota. Why not? Minnesota. Have it be like, because all their, you know, because they're from Minnesota, the Coens, so I guess they kind of like to hit that place again, or the Midwest. It seems like, isn't Miller's Crossing in Chicago?
You know, I don't remember.
Or is it Boston or something weird like that?
It might have been.
Well, anyway.
That's, I always saw it once.
Yeah, it's definitely definitely a movie.
I'm trying to remember when I watched that.
Miller's Crossing?
Yeah.
Did you watch it like on HBO or satellite or something?
No, I rented it. I just can't remember how long ago it was.
I saw it.
I don't remember watching it. Actually, no, maybe I did watch it up on Fickle Hill, so I guess it was sometime within the last
I saw it for a cinema class where we were talking about structure or something like that.
Who was I was talking to that had no idea what 2001 was?
The movie? Oh my gosh. Well, I could see that. It was made in 68. It was made a while ago.
Shit, just in school, I watched it twice.
Oh my gosh. What school is having you sit through that movie?
I watched it in Mr. Edwards' class, and I watched it in a summer school English class.
That is a weird movie to have someone sit down in the middle of the day and
with
watch.
With all the symbolism, I think it was about...
Yeah.
It was about expository writing, and then...
It could be. I mean, I remember Edwards really loved to talk up and down about how, you know, it was like, at the end, he's in sort of a Victorian setting, and that sort of saying something about how right there in the Victorian era, it was when everything went wrong, you know? We could have turned it back. We didn't have to have World War I. We didn't have to... You know, it's like basically the whole...
The Victorian era was so fucked.
Oh, yeah, you know. But, I mean, I don't
know.
It
was such a farce.
I know. It's bad
stuff. It was the heyday for prostitution.
Oh, man, are you kidding me? That's now.
Now?
The heyday for prostitution is always the present.
Okay.
It's gotta be.
It's gotta be.
Think about it. I mean, really.
No, I don't...
There's always more... As long as the population is growing, then there's more people. Which means there's more people wanting to bang.
That's, yeah, there's
some
logic.
I mean, there. I don't know. Maybe with the internet, there's more people being satiated through just, you know, checking the net, but. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how to kind of bookend this whole Fargo thing, but I would definitely give Fargo a 4 out of 5 because it's personally not some movie I just sit and love and love and love, but I can certainly appreciate it and I do enjoy watching it, and I'd probably watch it once every 5 to 10
years. I'm gonna give it a 4.5.
Ooh, well, you Mr. Intellectual over there with your corncob pipe, huh?
3.75 stars.
3.75 stars, like the usage on Star Search?
Out of 3.75 stars.
With Ed McMahon, whose voice made an appearance in Fargo?
He's dead, show a little respect.
Yeah, come on, respect. It's too soon. But, yeah. Fargo was good.
Yep.